Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to beat up the Cubs. We're going to be talking White Sox, talk a little Bears, who knows what else. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the Stars tomorrow, today, at family-friendly, affordable prices. Sure, the season is over for this year, but that shouldn't stop you from heading on over to icehogs.com. Get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, a belated Father's Day gift for the dad who's in your life or more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, I know you were at the Wolves game. They're in the finals against a team I had never heard of, but game one didn't go so well.
Winning with about 120 left, up 4-3, give up the tying goal, had nothing in overtime and lost pretty quickly. I mean, it was an absolute dagger to the heart. And just so you are aware, the Thunderbirds are now the Blues affiliate. So there was a lot of Blues fans in the stadium supporting that team. So I didn't know that was their new affiliate until this final. They have the St. Louis Blue logo patches on their shoulder, so easy to tell there. But luckily it was only game one and not game seven. So, you know, there's a whole series left, and it was still a real bummer being there because they were up 4-3 at one point. The crowd was buzzing, and just to lose like that, it stinks. And, you know, even though they didn't sell out, they didn't open the upper deck, the lower bowl was nice and full. So there were people there and, you know, everyone was really into it. Just wish they could have come away with a win. But hey, like I said, you know, it was only game one. But hey, you know, it's the second time I've been to a Calder Cup finals game. I went to one in 2019 when the Wolves were in it. And then, you know, obviously this past Sunday I was there as well.
Yeah, we went to the semifinals game. My wife got that to me as a birthday gift. And so we all went, and there was like three young ladies in front of us. And I think it might've been their first time drinking ever, because they were sloppy drunks and they were just like screaming at everything that happened and never sat down. It was fine with us, but it was hard for the kid to watch because she's not tall enough.
Yeah.
but at least they were into it, you know, at least they were on the hometown team's side and not a road team.
Yeah, exactly. There are always some fun people that go to those games, to say the least, those AHL games. So you always know you're going to get a lively crowd when you go there, and whether it's small or big, you know, you're going to have people that are into those games.
Yeah. We were laughing because there was a dude who was sitting right against the glass, and you could make a sign. Like, they had a station with like the paper and the markers, and he made a sign saying like, number, whatever, come fight me. And then on the other side, it was a different number, come fight me. And he would just rotate the sign. Whoever was and he was wearing a hockey helmet. And he was just trying to get people to fight him. And I was like, it's an interesting take.
It's like, next thing you know, like the glass pops down and a player goes in to actually fight him.
That wouldn't be the first time.
No, it wouldn't. Do you remember the time the Hawks game a few years ago when the glass came in and the helmet fell off the Jets player and the fan took it off and put it on him?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, that was like, I want to say like 5-6 years ago, give or take. But yeah, that happened at the United Center. It was Hawks, Winnipeg. I don't remember who the player was, but yeah, the glass caved in, the helmet came off. The guy picked up the helmet, just this dude in the stands, just put it on.
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many like ridiculous fan player interactions. You know, obviously there's the Malice in the Palace from the NBA. There was the White Sox fan and his son fighting the third base coach of, was it the Royals? Remember that one?
Yeah, I do, very vaguely. This was I was a little kid, so I don't really remember it happening live, but I saw the replay of this a few years later. I think it was 2000. Didn't the Dodgers, when they were playing the Cubs at Wrigley Field, didn't one of them or two of them go into the stands and there was this kind of like,
oh yeah, there was.
Yeah, it was like a fight of some sort, like right there in the stands.
I remember seeing video. I think this probably was before I was born. Is somebody, when there was the old bleacher bums at Wrigley, somebody threw a crutch at Pete Rose and Pete Rose climbed the ivy and tried to fight him.
Huh. I never knew that one.
Yeah, there's some doozies, but it's a lot of states now have like specific laws where if you go into the field of play, it's a felony.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think New York was the first to do it because they had, actually the fashion designer, Calvin Klein, walked out on the floor while the Knicks were playing because he wanted to talk to one of the players, like during a play.
Oh yeah. I think I remember reading something like that. And at first I thought it was a joke. And I'm like, wait, that really happened?
Yeah. So the law in New York is called the Calvin Klein law.
Wow.
Yeah. Some states don't, but like, I believe a bunch of states do though have it, where it's a felony, you know, where I mean, like, listen, every so often when you see a fan streaking in the field or, you know, whatever, somebody glues their hand to the floor, whatever the case may be, sometimes it's a little funny, but I think you do need a deterrent from having this be a regular thing because, I mean, that could be very dangerous.
Oh, sure. And you know, when a player sees somebody on the field or court or whatever, you know, they don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, how do you know they don't have a gun or a knife or, you know, whatever? Like, I mean, if you're like, it's not a normal person that's just going to go out onto the court or onto the field, or whatever. That's not normal behavior. Like, it's one thing if it's, oh, you won a big game and everyone rushes the court. Sure, you're just trying to get out of there, but you know, that's something you sort of expect. But when it's a random single fan comes out on the field, you don't know what to expect. You have no idea what they're going to do.
No. And I mean, sometimes it happens so fast that, you know, you only get to see what happens for a few seconds before security comes and tackles them. But even for a brief second, if you see it coming out of the corner of your eye, you know, it could be hard to react. You know, you see something coming at you and, you know, what's your first instinct to do? I mean, you don't know what's happening. And even if you get a good look and you see them coming out of the stands and they're coming straight at you, you know, you'll see some players just kind of cross their arms and watch it. But I'm sure even those who act like that have to feel a little uneasy, right? I mean, even if you're trying to play it cool, it's like, oh, you know, what's this person doing? I mean, most of the time, it's just an idiot on the field. I mean, that's what it is most of the time, but.
Or a again, squirrel.
Or a squirrel. But, you know, you never know in the end.
I say the squirrel. I don't know if anybody was watching the Cubs game today. There was a squirrel that the the field crew was trying to get.
Yeah, that was the most entertaining part of this game.
I wasn't watching. I was in my car, but I heard Pat and Ron giving a play-by-play of them trying to catch the squirrel.
Well, it was kind of funny because it happened right after Jonathan Villar dropped a pop-up. So that happens. And then you see they're in the left field corner. The crew is just trying to get a hold of this thing, and then they get it in the bullpen, and then you see people scurrying in the bullpen still trying to catch it. So it was off the field, but they still couldn't control the squirrels. So it was kind of like, well, you moved it from the field. That was your biggest goal. And now the bullpen crew's got to deal with it.
But while we're on the Cubs, boy, do they suck.
Hey, we had those two great games against the Braves. And everything else the past 2 weeks has been... yikes. I mean, this is just straight ugly. Straight ugly. Okay. Losing the finale to the Braves, whatever. They won that series. Saturday, they looked really good. Friday, they won 1-0. Cool. But
and the beauty of that one, Keegan Thompson back to looking like what we saw earlier in the season.
That was good. That was very good. And the next day, Justin Steele, a little rough at the end, but overall he did a solid job.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're seeing baby steps. Baby steps towards improvement. That whole San Diego series was dog shit tacos.
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't have said it better. You lose the first game to Yu Darvish. Okay, Yu Darvish is good.
I was there.
So was my dad and my brother. They were in Vines at Clark across the street. And that's when the tornado sirens went off. So
we were walking. We parked at Clark and Montrose and on the street and then walked down Clark. And I don't know. We got about halfway and we're like, man, it feels like it's going to rain. And we left from my buddy's house. It was only like maybe 15 minutes from the stadium. And we checked the weather before we got in the car and it said 0% chance of rain. We get there. We're like, man, it feels like rain. And we were driving his midlife crisis car. It's like a little convertible. So we put the top on just in case. We start walking. Like, it really feels like it's going to rain. And then the sirens going off. We're like, oh crap, it's gonna rain and tornado. And we get onto like Waveland because we have bleacher seats, so we're going the back way, and cop runs up to us and he's like there's an air raid or the tornado siren ordering there's a tornado siren, I'm ordering you to seek shelter. And I'm like, I can't hear you. There's a tornado siren. And he just looked at us like he wanted to kill us. Yeah. We were like 2 feet from walking in the door. So we go inside and we're there like hour, 40 minutes or whatever it was. And literally every food vendor was standing wide open. Like you walked, like immediately walked right up to and had your pick of who was going to ring you up. And nobody was getting food. They were just standing there. But then as soon as the game resumed, everybody ran down to the concessions. And there was like a 40-minute line to get any food. Like, why didn't you idiots just get it when there was no lines? But, you know, the game started off good. The people, the row in front of us and like maybe 6-7 feet to our right. When the outfielders are playing catch between innings, they threw two baseballs. There was a group of four of them. Two of them caught a ball from outfielders, and then one of them caught the home run from the Cubs.
That's cool.
So three of the four of them got a ball. But yeah, we're like, all right, starting off good. And then it just started going downhill from there.
Yeah, and you kind of sensed it coming when you couldn't really do much offensively, and you know you started playing with a little fire late in innings. You kind of felt that they were going to break through eventually. And of course they did. It was the next two games, though, that were truly bottom of the barrel embarrassing, particularly Tuesday's game when you were up 5-0 in what, the fifth inning, and you end up losing.
Yeah.
Like 14-5 or whatever that was.
12-5.
Whatever it was. I mean, those two games I turned off because they were just so bad. And I mean, it was just a merciless pylon. And we've seen that so much lately.
I was trying to explain to my wife how badly the Cubs lost on Wednesday. I was like, the White Sox won 13-0. And if they gave all 13 of their runs to the Cubs, on top of the runs the Cubs scored, they still lost.
Yeah. Bad shit. Bad shit. And I think that with that game, you look at what happened and you're like, you know, how do you go from a 5-run lead to that big of a deficit? And then you think, oh yeah, they did that how many times last year? Remember the infamous game in Milwaukee last year when they were up 7-0 in the first inning? Yep. And by like the third or fourth, they were doubled up. It felt like that again.
It was just miserable. And it's just been nonstop misery this season. Like every time you're like, okay, feels like I'm not going to say right the ship, but at least, you know, like you get a series in there where you're like, okay, they strung together two wins. All right, maybe we can level things out, make this a little bit of more of an enjoyable season. And then you just get another series like the Yankees or the Padres, and they kick the shit out of you. And it's just, I don't even know. I don't even know what to say.
And they're getting their shit kicked in by the Pirates right now.
Yes.
The Pirates.
Who are the worst offensive team in baseball. And they are laying it on you. And I knew it was going to happen too. As I was driving for the game, they were talking about how the Cubs and the Pirates are the two worst offensive teams in baseball. And I'm like, man, the Cubs are going to get lit up today.
Yeah, it's this is the perfect opportunity to get lit up. It's games like these. And you know what? It was kind of easy to predict the Cubs beating the Braves because you figured, you know what? 10-game losing streak, 14-game winning streak, the law of averages is going to come into play. And it happened. And that was cool and fun. But after tonight, because looks pretty likely you're going to lose. So if they indeed lose this game, you will have lost 12 out of your last 14.
Yep.
And a number of them by a wide margin. These aren't close games like they were. It's not the frustrating close games anymore. These are ass kickings. Merciless ass kickings. And it's not just the pitching that's always bad. The defense is bad too. The fundamentals is bad. It's just all around ugly. It's just not fun to watch.
You know what's sad? We're still two games up on the Reds.
Is it sad that we're still two games up on the Reds or only two games on the Reds? Remember, yes. They started that year, what, 3-20 something?
It's two really bad teams, but it's I don't know if they're catching up to us or we're sinking down to them or some sort of combination there.
It's a combination.
But this is a terrible baseball team.
And I'm really trying to practice patience. I am not telling people to give up now. I am really not, but it's unfortunate that Caleb Killian, after a pretty impressive first outing, his last two outings have been very unimpressive. The command is just way off.
Yeah, the command is terrible. And listen, it's hard to teach stuff at this level, but you can learn command. I mean, you know, if anything gives me hope, I was saying how I watched that Nolan Ryan documentary and the Mets gave up on him and he played on the 69 Mets. Like,
Didn't play much, but yes, he did.
And like on that amazing rotation, and they gave up on him because they were like, he's got crazy stuff. He's got, you know, he can't control it. And when he went to the Angels, he said he had a pitching coach that actually took an interest for the first time in his entire career. And that's when he figured it all out. I mean, you can figure out the command. So I still am not giving up on Caleb Killiam.
I have a question.
Sure.
When do we get to a point where we question what's going on with Tommy Hotovy? Something systematically doesn't seem right here. I don't want to say it's all his fault. I don't really know. And I'm not just talking about Killian. I'm talking about a lot of this other stuff. I know he wasn't a great guy, and I'm not saying I'd want him back, but remember Chris Bosio? Remember what a good job he did? Again, I don't want him back because, you know, he said some pretty awful things, but you know, you remember, you, but my point is, you know what a good coach can do for you. And right. With Hotovy, I'm not a pitching coach. I wouldn't know where to begin to be a pitching coach.
I think Tommy Hotovy is a very smart guy, but I don't know if he knows how to get these guys to where they need to be. And it doesn't help that we've got not a lot to work with. And it's going to, and it, you know, it's funny is I was driving to go pick up food and I was like, you know, I bet Alex is going to bring up whether or not we should get rid of Tommy Hotovy. I'm like, I don't know what made me think of that. I'm like, I know he's going to bring that up. And I don't know the answer to that. It's what part of it is Tommy Hotovy not doing a good job, and what part of it is you can't get good results from bad input.
Yeah, I don't know where to begin with that.
Smiley have been injured a lot. Right. Kyle Hendricks has just been going downhill. He's over down, the last several years.
Down, yes.
And then you're playing, you know, Smarmer and a bullpen guy in Keegan Thompson, and you're bringing up Caleb Killian, you're bringing up Justin Steele. Stroman's been injured.
And I'll say this, Stroman outside that one bad game against the Reds over the past month plus has been a lot better. So that's kind of nice to see. And I hope that Keegan Thompson can build off that last start that he had, because that was so badly needed. So badly needed.
By the Cubs and by him.
Right, exactly. But, you know, it just, I get it. It's hard when you don't have much consistency. And you look at the pitching staff last year, like the starters, you know, you had washed up Jake Arrieta and Zach Davies. And, you know, it's not like you were working with a lot of high powered, high end arms at that point. It's just, you know, you ask these types of questions because, again, with the Theo rebuild, when you had a guy like Bosio, I mean, look what he did with that pitching staff with so many of those guys, not just Jake Arrieta, but Hector Rondon and Pedro Strop and Jason Hamill. Remember how valuable he was? And he wasn't even like one of the big flashy guys on that team.
Right.
I just, that stuff matters. And again, I don't want to pine too much for Chris Bosio because I know what he's said in the past, and it's, you know, not something to be proud of on his point, but I mean, I'm just saying that stuff matters.
Yeah, I just don't know what to say. I mean, you're getting a lot of people. Alec Mills looks like doo-doo garbage. He looks like a, I mean, he's pitching like a bin of used diapers.
I mean, he at this point, he's just eating innings in these blowout losses.
And
honestly, that's all he is at this point.
And honestly, there, you know, you're shrinking your, by MLB rules, you're shrinking your pitching roster. And, you know, that really hurts a team like the Cubs, who just aren't getting good pitching performances. And, you know, you can't have your bullpen pitching, everybody pitching every day.
Oh, but we got Frank Schwindel. Oh, wait, he's hurt. I mean, you can tell when Frank Schwindel had to go out there time and time again, he clearly wasn't having fun up there.
No.
Only to get made fun of on national TV. It's gross. It's gross that we have to watch this night in, night out. And, you know, I get it. We're not very good this year. We have a lot to build up on. It's just when it's this helpless at times, it is just tough to watch. And it's, you know, Caleb Killian struggled again. Here's O'Neill Cruz coming up for the Pirates and is hitting the crap out of the ball and making an immediate impact.
Yeah, it doesn't help that your fielders can't field. And, I mean, you know, players aren't playing well. You got pitchers can't pitch. You've got, I mean, Schwindel, Miley, Suzuki, Stroman, Bodie, Madrigal, all on the injury list.
Yeah, injuries certainly don't help.
They don't help. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that the injury will actually be a good thing for Nick Madrigal. And if they don't give that man some rehab starts, then Jed is an idiot.
I should have done it the first time.
Is send him down to AA or AAA, let him work a few things out, and then bring him back up. I don't think the guy forgot how to play baseball. Sometimes it's just like a psychological thing moving to another team. It's just like you never get comfortable. And he's a limited tool guy. He's a contact guy. But, you know, the Cubs sort of, we talked about the Cubs needed something like that because they had so many strikeouts, couldn't move guys over, runners in scoring position over. Well, what if we had a contact guy? You know, between Nico Horner and Nick Madrigal, we've got some contact guys here. We diversify our lineup. And he's just garbagey.
A garbagey.
He's a garbagey.
Hey, look at the garbagey.
Boop-a-da-beep-a, he's a garbagey.
And you know, like, if Madrigal was hitting the ball hard, he just wasn't getting a lot of luck, and you know, he was spraying it around a bit, and you know, he's like, okay, you know, maybe you're just hitting into some tough luck, you're making solid contact, just build on that more. But it's not even solid contact at this point. It's slow rollers right to the infield, whether it's the shortstop or the first baseman, whatever it is, it's not even like competitive swings.
And I keep seeing people be like, oh, you got to re-sign. Oh, hit by pitch. I keep seeing people be like, oh, you got to re-sign Wilson Contreras. Why? Like, why? You are so far away from competing.
I mean, I get both sides of the argument because he's really good and he'd be one of the few things to actually watch. But, you know, I'm curious to see what teams would offer him at the deadline. I would be very, very curious to see. And I think if you are going to trade him, you better be getting closer to MLB-ready prospects, at least some of them. You can't be trading for 18-year-old Magic Beans anymore. You got to be past that. You got to be looking for more polished prospects with a pedigree.
I mean, you know, the guys we traded Yu Darvish for are still nowhere close to.
And Owen Casey's the only one that really stands out.
So, I mean, you know, you need a Pete Crow Armstrong in return or somebody where you see that path. Like, you just like, okay, this is, even if it's not, they're not AAA ready to come up, because I don't know if you trade a guy like that, if you're a contender, but a guy where you're like, I see a clear cut path for him to be to the majors, not a, you know, as you said, Magic Beans.
Magic Beans. Come get your Magic Beans. I mean, like, it's.
I'm sorry. They're Magic Legumes.
Oh, pardon me. Pardon me. I mean, we know the main reason for Yu Darvish was to shed salary. And this is a bit of a different situation. This is, you know, a guy that's a lame duck, so to speak, on the final year of control before free agency, and you're not contending. I mean, you could have extended him earlier. You decided not to do that. You can extend him whenever you want this year. But if you choose not to do that and you choose to get what you can for him, then you can't treat it like the Darvish deal. You're not shedding a ton of money. You're looking to get a big return for your future. And I just think that if you're going to do that, then you better be shopping pretty aggressively. You don't want to just settle, because he's an all-star right now. He is playing like an all-star. He is far and away your best player. When the Cubs traded the core, Rizzo wasn't the same guy. Baez was a shell of his former self. Chris Bryant was doing okay, but he wasn't the MVP, and he had his injury issues. You know, Wilson Contreras right now, knock on wood, you know, he's playing every day. He's playing great. You know, he's getting hits and driving the ball every day. I mean, the value is very high here. So you better not be selling short if you do indeed trade Contreras.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's your marquee trade chip to get better. Like, you're running out of trade pieces to get better. I mean, I guess you could dangle Ian Happ. Ian Happ's a guy, though, that I think you could still have here when you're good again.
I really like Ian Happ, and I mean, he's been playing so well since last August. He continues to hit. Like, he just continues to look good.
And my big difference between him and Wilson Contreras is he's going to cost a lot less than Wilson.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. He's much more cost friendly, even beyond years of arbitration control. I mean, he's a guy that could put up really good numbers, but you're not going to have to, if you're going to extend him, you're not looking at a massive extension. You're not looking at a ton of AV. You're not looking at 10 plus years. You're looking at something that's probably pretty reasonable. So why not have a cost control effective veteran on your team?
Yeah. The Vogelbach. Does that guy get fatter every time I see him?
I think so. He's a big, big dude. What did he do this time? I already turned the game off.
Oh, he just came up to bat. I stream everything. So his at bat probably already happened in real life, but on my screen, he's on and lined out to left. He's a big guy.
Yes, he is. Feels so long ago he was a Cub prospect. So we traded for Mike Montgomery, who got the final out.
Yeah. But I just, like I said, is, you know, your trade chips in order are Wilson Contreras and then Ian Happ, but I don't know if you'll get that value for him. And you pray and hope you could get rid of Kyle Hendricks. I don't see the value of keeping him anymore.
I don't think you're going to get any value in return, though.
I don't think so, but if you at least dump the salary, it's not a terrible salary, but
no, it's not.
But
it's sad with Kyle Hendricks. I'll always love Kyle Hendricks. His legacy is set in stone, and nothing he does on the mound in the future will tarnish all the good that he did. But he's just not that guy anymore.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's, you know, but my allegiance is to the team and not individual players. And I think they all understand this is a business, and that's why they're willing to leave, you know, jump ship on a team and go where they think the grass is going to be greener. The same thing with us as fans is, you know, like I can look at a player fondly of the time that they were here and still want to move on from that player for the betterment of the team.
Right.
And, you know, I think this is probably your last chance to be able to move Kyle Hendricks, because I don't think he's going to ever get any better.
I don't think so either.
Your best hope is to string a couple of good, you know, what is he? What is today? The 20th.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to have a couple more starts before the trade deadline. If you can get a couple of solid inning or outings from him and, you know, maybe finesse somebody. Yeah. Maybe you can dump him for some, I mean, he's a guy that you get. He's a guy that you trade for magic beans.
I mean, you could take what you can get from him at this point if you do indeed trade him. It sucks that we're at that point with him. It really does, but I don't really know what else to say at this point. He'll still give you the occasional good start, but overall, you're just not getting what you desire, what you used to anymore. And it's not like this is just a few start thing, a few start hiccup. Unfortunately, it goes back to the beginning of last year. I think it's a big enough sample size to just say, you know what, he's not the same guy he once was. And, you know, he's what, 33 now. He's, you know, he's been around a while. And when you pitch that kind of style, I think you're going to get figured out a little easier. You know, you don't throw hard. You don't have electric stuff. You rely on off speed and location. And, you know, if teams have a better scout on you and you're not fully executing to a T, you have a lot less margin for error.
How tall is O'Neill Cruz? He looks real tall.
I don't know. But he's probably going to be tormenting us for the next 6 years.
Probably. Well, yeah, however long that the Pirates can afford to keep him before they trade him.
Yep. So they'll torture us for a few years and they'll get traded to LA for a box of expired Subway coupons, and then he'll be the NL West's problem. Counting down the days.
No, he'll go on to his last year of arbitration. He'll get traded and he'll win a World Series, and then he'll sign a team-friendly deal with the Cardinals and then torment us from the Cardinals.
Don't even. You're probably right, though.
On the other side of town, I mean, the White Sox, they're playing better.
Yeah, definitely a way to say it.
But they're still not playing to where they should be. I mean, they kicked the crap out of Detroit, but Detroit is the Cubs of the AL. And
yeah, they're bad. I really thought Detroit was going to be better this year.
Yeah, they're terrible.
Blew.
I mean, that's a bad baseball team.
And that's got to be frustrating because they've been bad for a while now. They've been rebuilding for a good number of years. I thought this year they might flirt with mid-upper 70s wins. And I think a lot of people thought that too.
Yeah, I don't. mean, Miguel Cabrera is batting 294, though.
He's been their best hitter. The rotting corpse of Miggy is like their best hitter.
I mean, he's not hitting for terrible power, but like he's got a 368 slugging, but he's batting in the 290s, making contact. And yeah, this is it's a brutal team. But anyway, the White Sox did what they were supposed to do.
That's what you got to do.
They have to. And that's what the Twins took care of business earlier in the season when they had an easy schedule. And the White Sox need to do that in kind. They need to make sure that they're beating up on the bad teams, pad that record, because all you need to do is make the postseason. Everything hits reset once you make the postseason in baseball. In, you know, NBA, you sort of know who's going to win, who's not. I mean, it's, you may get a little bit of surprise here and there, but it's, you know who the good teams are, and those are the good teams are going to do well. Same thing with NHL. The NFL, you might get a team that sort of shocks you, but for the most part, you know what you're going to get. Baseball, though, it's, you know, with a good, like a really good team, like a Yankees or Dodgers or Astros or whoever, it literally takes like two consecutive cold games by your offense and you're done. You're out. That whole 162 game season was for naught.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a, you know, baseball is, it's funny. You look at this like marathon and then it's a sprint at the end, and everything in baseball is, you know, players are good over a long average, but at any time slice, it's not like, oh, this guy that bats 300, like, or let's say they batted 333 for ease of numbers, that one out of every three at bats that they're one for three every day or two for six every day. That's not how it is. It might be four for four this day. It might be 0 for 5 this day. It's a complete, you know, average over a long period of time. And any time slice, any player that's good can look like garbage, and every garbage player can look good in this small enough time slice. And you're taking these players with their numbers over a long average for a small time slice for the postseason. And it's a crapshoot. That's why the pitching is so important, because good pitching will at least keep you in the game to give your star hitters a chance to win you a game.
Yeah. And, you know, I think when you look at the overall outlook of just this White Sox team, you know, you got Lance Lynn back, and if he is even like 3/4 of what he was last year, that's really damn good. And you have a lot of games left against the Royals, against the Tigers, and then you got games left against Cleveland and Minnesota. They could still control their own destiny here. They got to do it. They got to execute. And if they don't do it, that's on them. But with everything wrong that has gone bad with this White Sox season so far, they're still sitting in a reasonable spot to get into the playoffs. You know, they're not 10 plus games back. They're not in a position where they got a bunch of tough series down the road. I mean, most of their tough series has already happened. I mean, you have one with the Blue Jays here, but you're looking better than you were before. You look at the series against the Astros. Game one was embarrassing. Then you see Johnny Cueto go out and just pitch like a freaking stud, and you win 7-0 as you ambush Verlander. Then you lose a close game. Yeah, you lost the game, but it was a close one. I think it's safe to say that a lot of White Sox fans felt that that series was going to go a lot worse than it did, even though you still lost 2-3. A lot of White Sox fans I knew were expecting an embarrassing sweep. And to be fair, it looked like it could be that way after game one, but it ended up being, I don't think, as bad as people thought it would be.
I mean, they routed you game one, you routed them game two, and it was a one-run game in game three.
Right, right.
You can live with that. The Astros are a really good baseball team. You know, they're running away with their division.
I think you're kidding.
They're up 9.5 games on the Angels. And what's even worse than that is look at the AL East. Toronto is 38-28. They're 10 games over 500 and they're 11 games out of first place.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, they're so far in the lead for the wild card, yet they're 11 games out of first place. Like, it's unreal.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, the Yankees so far have just been an absolute juggernaut. And, you know, this is what people thought the Yankees could be when they're healthy for the most part, when you have Stanton, when you have Judge, and now you have Anthony Rizzo doing good things for them. So give him some credit.
You know, while we're on the Yankees, I want to say Judge is a fantastic baseball player.
Yes, he is.
I would be really scared to give him a long-term contract.
I think the Yankees are too. I think that's why it's not as set in stone as people thought it would be. And we're talking about the Yankees here. Well,
The Yankees offered him a deal.
But he wants more.
Yeah, like I would, I mean, what age is he? He's 30, 31?
Something like 30. That.
He's 30. You know, with his injury history, I would not feel comfortable giving him more than a 5-year deal.
No, I would agree with you. I would absolutely agree with you. He's over the age of 30. He's had some injury issues in the past. That's a big commitment. It's an absolutely big commitment to get him. The payoff for when he's good is worth more than anything. I mean, he's so talented, but, you know, it's also very risky.
I mean, last year he played most of the season. 2019, he only played 102 games. 2018, only 112. 2016, only 27 games. But, I mean, his 162 game average is 47 home runs, 106 RBIs, 279, 385, 565, 950 OPS. Is it over his career? Is his 162 game average?
And pretty good.
Pretty, pretty, pretty good. I mean, last year was 39 home runs, 98 RBIs, 916 OPS, 150 OPS plus. The guy is a really good baseball player. I see a lot of people, Cubs fans, like, well, the Cubs should sign him. Why would he want to come here? Number one. Number two is, why would you sign him? Because you're going to have to sign him for probably a 7-year deal. And aren't you scared of when he's 38 years old and you're paying him $40 million a year?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just years, you know, as we alluded to, it's a shit ton of money he's going to want to make.
I mean, those are two big factors. He doesn't want to come here and play for this team where we're not an Aaron Judge away from being contenders.
No. And I mean, I don't think the White Sox are going to pay all that money either. I mean, obviously if he had a desire, a team, it would probably be the Sox because of what position they're in. But I mean, I'm just saying that it's, I just don't think he's going to get the money from the Sox that he would command. There are very few teams that I think that would give him the money that he would command.
The Yankees offered Aaron Judge an extension of 7 years at $30.5 million annually, plus $17 million for this season, which was his final year of arbitration. So essentially 8 years, $230.5 million per year. His counter was 10 years at $36 million a season.
Holy shit.
I mean, it's not like the Yankees can't afford it.
I mean, that's 10 years. I mean, I know we look at Bryce Harper. We've seen decade plus extensions before, but when you're already over 30, Bryce Harper was what, in his mid 20s when he got that big deal with the Phillies?
Yeah.
He's already over 30. I mean, how long was that Pujols contract? That was like a decade long too, because he signed in 2012 and last year is when they DFA'd him. And he signed as a free agent this year with the Cardinals. So, I mean, that was a decade-long deal for him. And we saw how that worked out.
Yeah, it never works out. He signed a 10-year, $240 million contract in 2012.
And they never won a single playoff series.
Nope.
Under that contract.
So, yeah. 2001, he played for $200,000. 2002, $600,000. 2003, $900,000. Then he signed a 7-year, $100 million extension. Then went to the Angels for 10 years, $240 million. And then he signed a contract last year with the Dodgers for 1 year, $570,000. And this year he's at $2.5 million. So he was 32 when he signed a 10-year extension.
Yeah, and again, look how that went. And, you know, Pujols, too, he had issues with his ankles and his legs, and you saw that catch up to him.
I'm looking at Mike Trout. He is about to turn 31. He signed a 12-year deal and it will end when he's 38, which, okay, you can live with that because you got him, you know, essentially through his entire prime all the way through the end of his career, pretty much.
And look how good he is. Mike Trout.
Yep.
Generational. I mean, absolutely generational. I mean, so is Pujols and, you know, Aaron Judge, you could argue there, but man, Mike Trout is just on another level altogether.
Aaron Judge just started too late to be a generational. I mean, the guy's really good, just hasn't put up the career numbers.
I think if he was healthier, he would be, but yeah, I agree.
I mean, Aaron Judge has 2,000 at bats in his career. I guess it's not too bad.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's just, you know, how old was Trout when he came up? Like 20, 21? He was pretty young.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Aaron Judge gets. I think they'll probably settle somewhere 7 to 8 year range, 8 years.
Yeah, I could see that.
And keep him forever.
It's really hard for me to not see him in New York. But then again, I said the same thing about Freddie Freeman in Atlanta, and look what happened.
True. Somebody, not to jump back to the Cubs, but somebody posted something. I just sparked my brain that the Cubs probable starters for this four-game Pittsburgh series are Caleb Killian, Swarmer, Thompson, and Steele, who have a combined 41 Major League Baseball career starts. The last time the Cubs had that few combined starts in a four-game series with each pitcher only starting one game was in 1902.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's a good thing. Youth movement, but we got to start seeing better results from these guys.
Yeah, and again, I like what I've seen from Steele and Thompson lately. I mean, I should say Thompson's last start, but the two before that weren't very good, but we'll see. I say that now and they'll look like shit. That's how it usually works.
But yeah, the White Sox, going back to the White Sox, took care of business against Detroit. Dylan Cease looked good. Lance Lynn looked okay coming back.
Can't expect 100% coming back from that.
Right. But you got a absolute stinker from Lucas Giolito against Houston.
I mean, honestly, he's been their biggest blemish in the rotation right now. It's been him. I mean, yeah. Cease had a few bad starts, but then he's rebounded nicely. You know, Lynn's working his way back. Michael Kopech looks really good. Even Vince Velasquez hasn't looked bad, but
he just can't pitch more than a couple. He's like a long reliever. That's what
right,
he is.
Right.
Like I think once you get a full healthy rotation, that's probably where his best baseball is going to be. Cause he's had some nice runs, but he pitches like 2 1/3 or 3 1/3 innings. Like that's like, you don't get a lot out of him. So if you can use him to come in for, fifth and a sixth or sixth and a seventh, I think that's where you're probably going to see the best results from him. But you haven't, you've had a couple of rough outings, but Vince Velasquez has not been that bad.
No. It's just, you look at Giolito and it's kind of been the same thing. The first inning doesn't look great. Then innings 2 through 4 look fantastic. He looks like an ace. Then he hits a wall in the fifth inning and everything just goes to shit. I mean, it's kind of like the Chris Archer effect with him, where he ends with 4, 5, 6 runs given up in only 5 innings, but he's got like 8 strikeouts. I mean, that's right. Literally what Chris Archer did towards the end of his career. And you want to get him normal again, because, he's one of your most important players on that whole team. I mean, in my opinion, that's been really the one blemish over the past week with the Sox has been Giolito. And sure, you could argue more injuries with Moncada, which I'm sure Sox fans are tired of hearing of. And yeah, you've had Liam Hendricks hurt, but, at least with the Sox, they're hitting now. Like, this looks more like the offense that they were supposed to be. And if they're just getting started now and they get healthier, I think this team is going to have a big second half. I really, really do. But all those, you want all those things to come together. You want them to play better fundamental baseball. We said multiple times that it looks like they're coming together and then they go through a rough patch. They need to find that consistency. I still think they are more than capable of putting together a big second half run and taking this division handily.
Yeah. And you got an excellent start from Johnny Cueto.
He's been amazing for them. Like, I got to give him credit. I thought that was going to be a disastrous desperation signing, but so far he's been great.
I honestly thought the same thing. I thought this was going to be like, for him, that one last chance to try to pitch in the majors. And it was going to look like a fat, desperate old man's, flopping dead on the beach. And it was going to be an embarrassment, and it hasn't. He's been great. And it's the best he's pitched in years. And I know it's a mirage. I know it's not legit.
I don't know. I mean, he looks good. It's not like he's having like a fluky outs. Like, he legit looks good.
Maybe I should frame that better. This is not going to last into the postseason. I don't think you're riding him
you shouldn't have to ride him. If everything else comes together, you shouldn't have to ride Johnny Cueto.
I mean, when you go into the postseason, I mean, if the postseason were starting today, who do you trust, Giolito or Johnny Cueto?
I mean, right now, Johnny Cueto, but I would also be very nervous about that. And like, at least Giolito's got the experience. Well, Johnny Cueto's got experience too, obviously, but more recent experience. You know, Johnny Cueto, his last real good season was, what, 2016? Whereas Lucas Giolito's pitched in the postseason the past 2 years. I know that, you know, mixed results. His first career postseason start was fantastic. The second one, not so much. But, you know, Johnny Cueto just hasn't been a big factor for a team in several years now. But, you know, if you're going off just how month, Johnny Cueto's been better.
I don't know. I'm always of the mind is baseball, you ride the hot hand.
It's fair.
And, you know, I don't give a shit necessarily. If, I mean, it's one thing if somebody's got a long pedigree of just being great and hit a rough stretch and you're like, you know what? I trust them. We've gone in the battle together. I trust them. But, you know, at some point though, you go, I don't know. I got to ride the hot hand here.
No, I get that. I think that's very valid.
But we're a long way off from that. I mean, we're months off from that.
Right. You don't want to think about that right now, because for all we know, by the end of the year, Giolito's refound his form. You don't have to worry about that. And everyone else is healthy. I mean, you know, whether or not you actually play with a full lineup at one point this year is remain to be seen. But I feel like Sox fans have to be at least a bit more encouraged from what they've seen the past week or so. I mean, if we were talking 10 days ago, I think the feelings among the fan base were very different. I think there were fans that I dare even say were ready to think about selling at the deadline. But over the past week, overall, it's looked a hell lot better. Killing Detroit, scoring all those runs, you know, having a more competitive series against the Astros than you thought. And, you know, right now they're spanking Jose Berríos. We'll see how this game ends, but it looks like the offense is here to stay productive.
Yeah. And that's the important thing is, man, Christopher Morel just had the wild at bat. He fouled one off like his knuckles, went straight back, hit the ump right in the eye hole of the face mask, and Morel's bat went flying, and he looked around like he didn't know where his bat went. But he got a single, so it's all good. Cool. But the White Sox offense is what needs to come around. The pitching, you've got enough pitching where even when somebody hits a wall or hits a groove, you know, bad groove, you've got enough pitching to work around it, especially with Cueto pitching well. But that offense needed to come alive, and you're finally, you know, it sucks as you finally get Moncada getting a hit, you know, getting some hits, and he gets a hammy. You know, we talk about the Cubs injuries, and you know, with the White Sox, you've got Grandal with a back, Moncada with a hammy, Liam Hendricks with forearm issue, Eloy with a hammy, Lurie Garcia's been day to day, Tim Anderson with his groin. Like they've returned to the injury bug that hit them last year.
They have. And the fact that they're now starting to score, not even full capacity, I mean, that's got to feel good, right? Like if you get Eloy back, you add that.
Well, you got Tim back.
You got Tim back. Yep. So you get that back. And if you add Eloy into the mix, I mean, this offense could go the fuck off in the second half, especially with that schedule coming up. Like they can write a lot of this ship coming up.
You know, it's a good thing not having Lurie Garcia available. Forces the drunken sea captain to play other people. I mean, Andrew Vaughn is going lights out. Luis Robert is turning it on. You know, hasn't been hitting with the craziest of power, but
the, he's hitting. I mean, that's hitting. You know, that's better than nothing.
Abreu's got a few good games in here. Pollock is the, you know, he's been hit or miss. Jake Berger's been okay.
He's getting some timely hits.
It's nice because, I mean, he's honestly, when Moncada comes back, why in the world don't you just play Jake Berger at third and Moncada at second?
I think you got to try it.
Because Harrison and Lurie Garcia are stinkers.
Hey, Harrison homered tonight. He read your tweets.
But I don't care. He's still batting 214. You know, he stinks. Adam Engel stinks. But, you know, those studs, your Tim Andersons, your Vaughns, your Luis Roberts, like those guys are going to carry you. And that's what you need, is to give them help with the bottom of the order. Don't put in guys that are like historically bad, like Lurie Garcia. He's had a historically bad season.
Yeah. You don't want to have that. You don't want to have that situation cost you any more games.
Like, you, just because you have studs at the top of the order, don't throw easy outs in there. Every out should be precious for you. And, you know, the goal is, what's the old saying, is hitting is contagious. And when you throw in an easy out like Lurie Garcia, that just, you never get that momentum going. Is you need to keep going. Even if guys aren't hitting great, as long as they're making good contact, Lurie Garcia's not. I mean, he's striking out a ton. And when he does hit the ball, it's soft contact. You know, Reese McGuire is not good, but at least he's a good fielding catcher. And I heard he's got awesome power in his right forearm. Doom boom. But I if this White Sox offense figures out their issues and you can work around Tony La Russa and his stupid offensive lineup constructions, like this team is going to be really good.
Yep. I still believe in them. I'm not even a Sox fan. I still believe in them.
I mean,
what they do after in the postseason, I don't know, but in terms of getting to the postseason, I still think they'll be fine.
Yeah. And I've had some White Sox fans tell me that, you know, I'm being dumb, but I'm trying to be objective here. Is their division is not very good. They're by far and away the best team in the division. And, you know, they're so much better, I think, that they can overcome the mediocre body of work that they've put forward and still win this division. I really think so. And it's just mathematics. Like they're the better team, and, you know, they're going to get guys healthy, and they're already starting to play a little better. They just, you know, once that schedule cools down a bit, you're going to see them run away with, you know, 8 straight, 7 straight. And they're going to pass Cleveland real quick. Then they'll just be, you know, right on the heels of the Twins. They'll catch up by the trade deadline. I think they're going to be neck and neck for first place.
I think so too. We'll see what happens. We'll see how it goes, but I could totally see it.
I don't know. You want to talk a little Bears?
Sure.
There's not a ton going on, but it seems like the rumor mill is flying around that, I mean, Robert Quinn didn't show up to mandatory camp, and Matt Eberflew said, I don't know. I'm letting Ryan Poles deal with that. And I think that's the right response. That should be a Ryan Poles job. but I don't like that he hasn't shown up yet. You know, he's saying, oh, you know, I'm a veteran. I'm over 30. I'm just saving my body. But show up to camp. And then, you know, if you tell the coaches, hey, listen, I'm buying into the system. I want to be here. I want to be in the classroom. I want to watch. I just don't want to put my body through this. I know my body. You know what I can do. I broke for, you know, a historically great defensive history team. I'm the sack leader, the single season sack leader. You know, they're probably going to work with him. It's like, let me save my body for the season. They're going to work with him. But when you don't show up, it's hard to defend. It's right. Really.
And not even say anything. I mean, I don't know if Poles has had any contact with him or what, but you got to say something, right? Just to not show up.
You know, and it's just like he has. I mean, I guess he could try to force his way out. You know, and I'm trying to think of like what would be a contingency plan if he forces his way out.
Well, why would you want to burn that bridge, even if you want out? I don't know. I don't really understand it.
It's not my thing. I mean, I get certain players when they're just like, hey, listen, I've earned this contract. I've done this. Like, it's not about the money. He just doesn't want to play here. I think that's a different story.
Well, yeah. I mean, him wanting to play here is one thing. That's not the issue. The issue is just not showing up, not saying anything. Like, that's the issue.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess if you're Ryan Poles at this point, do you start fielding calls? What can you get for him?
I'm sure that he's thinking about that. Maybe he's even tried it. He's gauging the market.
I mean, that's probably what I would be doing, at least, because if you could get a third round pick for him and dump that salary, you have to look at, like, okay, that puts us in a really good position next year. And it gives you at least time to try to see what you can find in free agency and get them here signed and in plenty of time before training camp opens. It's not an ideal situation, but at least then you're not getting a Jason Peters situation where, you know, a couple weeks before the first preseason game, you know, you're signing a guy. But at this point, the market's pretty bare. I mean, you could bring in a Jason Pierre-Paul probably on a 1-year deal. You could take a flyer on like Tack McKinley.
Why? I mean, you know, you list these guys and you say, why not? I mean, these are all going to be hypothetically 1-year deals. And if they're not good, you cut them.
I mean, I think the concern is you're not generating pass rush and you're leaving those defensive backs out on an island. And I think, you know, the hope here was you would get a similar performance. I mean, obviously you can't expect 18 and a half sacks from
Robert Quinn. That's just flat not realistic.
But if you go, okay, let's go 12. I think that's a reasonable expectation. 11, 12.
Yeah.
And you see a bump in production from Travis Gipson from more playing time and, you know, a new system and, you know, more reps and one more year of experience under your belt. You expect better numbers from him and you're like, okay, you sort of even out there, but you take away those 11, 12 sacks you're expecting from from Robert Quinn, and suddenly you're like, I don't know where you expect to get that production from.
I mean, what? Travis Gibson would be the only one returning that was among your top five sack leaders outside Robert Quinn. Max gone, obviously. That's a big loss. And you drafted the one kid. I'm blanking on his name, so pardon me on that. But you didn't do a lot to replace the pass rush you lost outside one draft pick.
Right. But, you know, you're looking at Dominique Robinson is the guy you're talking about.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
So, you know, your edge rushers, you're going to have to pick it up with Travis Gibson, Dominique Robinson, Muhammad that you signed from the Colts, Sam Kamara. Like, that's like, you're probably going to want to bring somebody in. And that's like I'm saying is your, here's the available names, Jason Pierre-Paul, Anthony Barr, Carl Nassib, Carlos Dunlop, Tack McKinley, Derek Wolfe, Benson Mayoa, KJ Wright, Jeremiah Atachu, who you just cut.
Sign him back.
Bring them back. Justin Houston, Pernell McPhee.
Man, he's still technically active.
He's actually the same age as Jason Pierre-Paul. They're both 33.
Huh. Could you imagine? Bring back that Pernell McPhee guy.
We saw some good stuff from him.
Hey, I really liked him a few years ago, but that was obviously many years ago.
That's many years ago. That was like, what, 7 years ago?
Yeah, that was,
I think he was like
quite a while ago.
I think he was 26 when the Bears signed him. So yeah, that was like 7, 8 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, at that point, then you're like, okay, well, we dump the Robert Quinn salary and we sign a guy like, I mean, Tack McKinley, the beauty of him is you're like, okay, he's 26. And you're like, okay, maybe a new organization can get the most out of him. Because his, you know, it's six sacks his rookie season. His sacks went 6 sacks, 7 sacks, and then just nothing. You know, he went 3.5, 1, and last year 2.5. Like the production dropped off, but he's 26. You know, he should just be going into his prime. You're like, okay, maybe we can get something out of him. Or you can go like a Jason Pierre-Paul, who's, you know, literally at the end of his career and doesn't have a whole hand, but, you know, that guy, 2 years ago had 9.5 sacks. You know, see what you can get out of him. But I see both sides of this. If Robert Quinn doesn't want to play, you might as well move him because you don't want to have a guy that doesn't want to be there that you're paying that much money for.
And I do think if they do indeed move him, we do have to be realistic about what you're going to get in return because he's coming off a fantastic year. We all know that, but you're not going to get first round picks for a guy on the other end of 30.
No,
you're just not going to.
I think you're lucky if you get a third round pick.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's going to look, a potential trade is going to look disappointing, mainly with what you got from him last year, but you know, I think most people do understand the value of football players. I mean, there's more than just what you did in a year. I mean, age means so much in this game, especially for that position. I mean, look at what Khalil Mack got for coming to the Bears from what Ryan Pace gave the Raiders when he was 26 in his prime to on the other end of the 30 mark and coming off injury. You know, it's a pretty big difference. And even though the value of Robert Quinn is technically higher based on just performance last year, you know that Khalil Mack is an even better football player. And he's, you know, his value, the resume is more valuable, but the numbers on the other end of the spectrum from last year, words are just not coming out great right now. What I'm trying to say is Robert Quinn is not the player that Khalil Mack is, but Robert Quinn is coming off a better year. Look what Khalil Mack got from the Chargers. I mean, the main return there was salary, you know, salary cap and a second round pick. In this case, he's still going to make a lot of money. Robert Quinn's still making a lot of money. He's coming off a better year than Khalil Mack, but he doesn't have the resume of Khalil Mack. That's what I was trying to get out that I just could not articulate very well. So please pardon me for that. You get what I'm saying, right?
Right.
And that jumble of words.
You know, it's really hard for NFL fans to look at trades and understand what's a good value, what's not, because they'll see, oh, you know, why did Sam Bradford get a first round pick, but Khalil Mack got a second round pick? And Khalil Mack is going to be a Hall of Famer, and Sam Bradford sucked, was a bust. You know, and it's just like, well, you got to look at position, and there's several factors in there. One is if you catch a team in desperation, like if let's say there was a Super Bowl potential team, like a team with Super Bowl aspirations, that their edge rusher, like a star edge rusher, went down on the eve of the season or in spring or preseason games, and they went, shit, you've sort of got them over a barrel. They're paying because out of desperation.
Right.
So that's a situation, you know, a lot like that's what Cleveland is hoping to do with Baker Mayfield. They're hoping some quarterback goes down for a team that is a contender. And they're going to go, you know what, at this point, do we go with our backup the whole season or do we go with Baker, knowing Baker's probably not the best, but he's better than our backup. And you trade for Baker.
You know, and the thing, I mean, with the Cleveland Browns is they pretty much burned their bridge with Baker Mayfield.
The Cleveland Browns botched that whole situation from the jump.
I mean, these allegations against Watson have been out for a while,
They're getting worse, not only about him, but about the Texans that they facilitated this. Like, this is, and his now his the NFL Players Union insiders are saying, yeah, we're bracing for a long suspension.
Could be a whole year.
It's possible. So if they give him a year, you just went and put together a team that's supposed to be a Super Bowl contender, and you're going to ride with Jacoby Brissett.
I mean, even though it's gotten worse after the trade, we all knew about this. You all knew the baggage it was going to bring. They wouldn't have done this, I don't think, had they had full faith in Baker Mayfield. Clearly, they don't.
I totally get not having full faith in Baker Mayfield. I get
it. I do too. It's just to make that move.
That was a move of just complete desperation. And they botched it. They traded way too much for a guy that might be suspended this whole year. And they gave him guaranteed money.
A lot of it.
A lot of it. O'Neill Cruz, RBI single, driving home Vogelbach.
You're still watching that crap?
Yep.
Ugh.
His exit velocity on the double he hit in the third inning was the hardest by any Pittsburgh Pirate this season. 113 miles an hour exit velocity.
Yeah, it's going to be fun dealing with him for a while. Yep, cool.
But the Browns are just dumb. But anyway, it goes back to when you get a team that's desperate. Well, especially if you get an owner that's desperate and leans on their general manager, that's your winning combination right there. Is then the owners leaning on the general manager to get a player, and you're able to get, you know, whatever you want. You get the haul, but you know, you get a team bent over a barrel where they're stuck paying your fee, then you get a higher price. Marquee positions, you're going to get a premium. Wide receivers, cornerbacks, quarterbacks, you're not getting a haul for defensive linemen. You're not getting hauls for, you know, a lot of positions, and you pay for that star power. You pay for a contract that's got, you know, team control. If you pay for somebody that, like, they had an outstanding first two seasons on their rookie contract and they were first round pick and you get three more years of them, all right, that's even better because you're salary controlled in a salary cap league. So there's a lot of factors that go into things. And, you know, a Robert Quinn, just because he had an awesome season last year, you're not going to see somebody overpaying for him because they know that they're going to be paying a huge sum of contract money. And, you know, he's not a premium position player. So I think you'd be lucky to get a third round pick for him. But if you can get a third at this point, if he's not going to show up and you can get a third round pick, dump that salary, the way, according to Over the Cap, is that would give you over $36 million of cap space this season and $110 million of cap space next season.
Wow, that much. I knew it was a lot. I didn't realize it was that much. Wow. Boy, did Ryan Pace give out big contracts. Holy shit.
Yeah, he did. And did Ryan Poles clean house.
And we all thought that Ryan Poles trading Robert Quinn in the offseason prior to the draft was a pretty big possibility. Or even during the draft. I mean, we thought that was a big possibility. We thought that could have been cleared on the books too, and it still might happen. It still might happen. I mean, think about it. If you traded both Quinn and Mac, the amount of salary that was saved from all that is astronomical. I mean, how much dead money do we have right now? Like $90 million worth? Next year, that's all going to be freed up. And if you knock a lot of salary off now, I mean, this year it doesn't really do you much because you're not going to make any more big moves. But regardless, 2023, the books are going to be wide open.
I just want to point this out, that if you get rid of Eddie Jackson next season and Cody Whitehair, which are really, really, really realistic possibilities, you put yourself next year at almost $133 million cap space.
Oh, man. And then,
and a full roster of draft picks.
I like the sound of that.
And if you get, if you're able to get third rounder for Robert Quinn on top of that, you know, then you have an extra third round pick. You know, Ryan Poles is going to be like, all right, we're going to suck this year because we can't get after the quarterback, but boy, are we going to turn it around next year?
Well, and think about it too. If you could stack up a little more draft capital for next year, you might be able to put yourself in a position to trade up. They weren't in a position to trade up this year, but maybe next year when you're going to be more aggressive, you can. Just saying.
It just, you know, you are in a good spot to be able to turn this team around quick, but it just, Robert Quinn, the reason you didn't trade him is, one, you're probably not getting the value offers that you had hoped, but two is you need somebody to rush the passer.
Yep.
It's just, somebody's got to get after the quarterback. And as much as you like the prospect of Travis Gibson, do you want him to be the guy that the other team focuses on to take away? No, you sort of want him as a rotational piece.
He's a good player, but he shouldn't be your number one guy.
Yeah. You need more than that, especially when you've got like your whole offensive line or your defensive line could be something like Travis Gibson, Dominique Robinson, Justin Jones, and Angelo Blackson. Like, that is not the defensive line that you were hoping for.
Man, the Larry Ogunjobi thing, if that didn't fall through, that would have made just such a big difference. That is such a bummer.
I'm just saying, I believe he's still available.
If he's still available and nobody's signed him yet, I mean, that's got to say something, right?
He is still available. So is Eddie Goldman.
They need help on that defensive line. They really do. Because I don't know how much you can scheme to control the trenches. Because if you're just physically getting beat, it's hard to scheme against that.
I know a guy that can come in and eat blocks up. That's available.
You?
Ndamukong Suh.
Oh. Sean Hartman's
coming.
Who is this meatball on the field that's going up to the defensive line? You're doing like your big, like mean face. You're trying to be all intimidating for a snap. The guy just runs over you and you go flying in the air like Charlie Brown.
I feel like my biggest asset is the offensive lineman would pile drive me so hard and so fast that he would get thrown off balance because he would be expecting to like meet another giant grown ass man. And it would just be me and he would fall over. And then the linebacker can come in that empty hole and make the play. It's kind of like eating the block.
Hey, there you go. There you go. Hey, you got a plan. That's all that matters, right? I mean, as long as you have a plan, then maybe it can work.
You know, I think that works like three times a game. And, you know, assuming that each time that the Roquan Smith runs through that hole, strip sack, or, you know, causes a fumble, it picks it up and runs for a touchdown. That's 21 points. I did my job. Right?
Aha, there you go. See, it's all figured out.
And then they can pay me with tchotchkes from Gallagher Way.
Wouldn't it be funny if George McCaskey just sent you home with a giant like refrigerator, just Dasani water? Here you go. It's the finest Dasani water we have at Soldier Field. It's yours. It's the giant vending machine of Dasani water, just on a little dolly. He's just wheeling it out to you. Squeak, squeak, squeak. Here you go.
The Bears, the offense is starting to look better. Justin Fields starting to look better. But right now it's all passing drills. They're not running the ball. It's just passing drills. So it's hard to say what's going to happen when training camp opens. But the offensive line, I don't think we're going to see a rookie starting at left tackle. I don't see it. you know, I know that was the last configuration of the offensive line during minicamp, but I think that's another message to everybody saying, listen, everything is other than Justin Fields. Everybody's going to have to win their spot. And they're sending messages to Ryan Pace guys.
Tevin Jenkins, Cody Whitehair, Larry Borum.
Yep. I mean, it's the same thing with Jalon Johnson. Jalon Johnson is probably still the best cornerback on this roster. Kyler Gordon probably will surpass him at some point, but he's injured with some injury. Jalon Johnson was the number one cornerback on this team for the last couple seasons, and they sent him a message too. So they're sending a message to all the guys that were Ryan Pace guys, the veterans that are here, and saying, hey, there's a new sheriff in town. We're running things this way. I don't know how, you know, I don't take any stock during minicamp of somebody getting demoted. I just don't buy it. I didn't buy it with Jalon Johnson. I don't buy it with Tevin Jenkins and Larry Borum. You know, who knows? Maybe one of those draft picks just takes off during training camp, but in pads and helmet, I just don't see it. I really think it's just a message saying, listen, we didn't bring you in here. We inherited you. We're cleaning house. You need to prove your worth to us. And, you know, that's a sucky thing to think, but it's the way that you have to do to build a winning organization. And I think you'll be fine with Jalon Johnson. I think you're going to be, I think those guys, there's certain guys like Roquan Smith is not going to get demoted down because they know who he is. They don't care who, you know, he elevates beyond being a quote Ryan Pace draft pick. He's probably
your best defender.
Yes, he is your best defender. He is an elite player. And so he's going to buy into this system. Jalon Johnson, he's been very good, but you could replace him. He's replaceable. Tevin Jenkins is replaceable. Larry Borum is replaceable. These guys, you're sending them a message is you got to play and you got to buy in. And I think Jalon Johnson is going to buy in. I think Tevin Jenkins and Larry Borum are going to be your starting offensive tackles. You know, I don't buy into somebody won a starting, you know, somebody got demoted, somebody got promoted from an offensive line in pads in, you know, early June. I just don't buy that.
That's fair.
That doesn't make sense.
That's fair.
You know, there's a rationale behind it, but it's not based on play. You know, so I have a feeling. I mean, Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus would love to see their draft picks win spots out.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. It's what you want. So don't be surprised if the offensive line is, you know, the way it ended minicamp, where you had your rookie at the left tackle and Tevin Jenkins at right tackle and Larry Borum, you know, playing second string, or was it Tevin Jenkins playing second string? No, I think it was Tevin Jenkins, second string, and Larry Borum at right tackle. Don't be surprised if that's not the start of training camp, but come the preseason games, I think you're going to see who wins out those starting jobs. And with the pedigree that Tevin Jenkins has, and I think he was one of the few offensive linemen that showed something to Ryan Poles last year with his meanness and toughness and attitude. I think he's gonna end up winning the job left or right tackle. And, you know, Larry Borum probably just from experience going to win that left tackle job, but, you know, we'll see once they actually get pads on.
So, not to go too off topic, I'm looking at the depth chart right now. The tight ends, man. After Cole Kmet, have you seen them?
What is it like? O'Shaughnessy and
Ryan Griffin. O'Shaughnessy and Rice and John. I just don't know much about these guys. I mean, hasn't O'Shaughnessy been around for a bit?
Him and Griffin have been around. I would have liked to have seen another tight end in here, but
me too.
Honestly, most of the time you're going to see them as blockers. This is going to be a run first offense.
Yep.
It's true. And you've got better blockers in than receivers. Cole Kmet is going to be your big time receiver.
Mm-hmm.
If he puts up 10% better numbers for receptions and passing yards, even if he puts up the same numbers as he did last year, it's the touchdowns that were bad.
Yeah. Yeah. You need that presence in the red zone because you don't have Jimmy Graham anymore.
And part of that was that they didn't target him in the red zone. You got to target him.
Right.
So I think even if you put those same numbers up and you give him 4 to 5 touchdowns, those numbers look a whole lot better.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably right. I mean, my big thing with Cole Kmet, I've said it on the show before, is I just want to see him get better yards after the catch. I want to see him be able to out muscle guys like you would want to see in a number one tight end. And we just haven't really seen that yet, but you know, maybe in a new system with a new philosophy, you'll see a bit more of that. And when he's more efficiently targeted, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. I mean, you really need him to be a number one tight end across the board. And, you know, they got a scheme with him better. You know, you weren't getting the best scheme for Matt Nagy. So you got to utilize that. And he wants to take advantage of that too. I mean, you know, looking at the offensive production, some of the other guys, Ryan Griffin is like a second, third string. Offensive production's fine. You know, it's nothing eye popping. He had 261 yards last year and he made 27 catches. You know, like you said, if he's an effective blocker and he can make the occasional catch, okay, fine. You know, he's been around a while. He's been around since 2013. It's just, you know, he's been on some bad Texans teams. He's been on some bad Jets teams. So that's why he might not be as well known to other people as, you know, other tight ends would be. But, you know, if Cole Kmet's good, then it makes your tight end group as a whole a hell lot better. I mean, he's really, really important to this team. Even if you are a beat him in the trench kind of guy, you need production from your number one tight end. Just pure and simple.
Here's my hope. And until right now, all you can go on is hope and feelings.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is one, have you seen the way he showed up to minicamp? He looks like the Incredible Hulk.
Who, Cole Kmet?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Stacked. So you're like, okay, maybe this guy worked on his strength. He's clearly been in the gym. And the other thing is, yeah, the hope is that this, I know we're hanging a whole lot on this offensive system, but to be honest with you, I'm not being like, oh, this offensive system is suddenly going to be, this well-oiled machine. It's that the old system was so bad that just being competent makes things look that much better.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the sad truth to it, is that we would honestly at this point just take competent compared to what we've had to watch the past few years.
I mean, it's like when you're dying of thirst, even Mountain Dew is going to taste good.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Are you dissing Mountain Dew?
I am totally dissing Mountain Dew.
Whoa. Whoa. you're probably the motherfucker that would choose crab juice over Mountain Dew. I'll take a crab juice. He just added that generic can, just a picture of a crab on it. It cracks me up every time.
He drinks a whole bunch of them.
You have a bathroom in there? Only half galash. Men's room and tower, observation deck.
Oh, that episode is so good.
That's an all-timer.
Do they even air that episode anymore?
No, they don't. But you know, you could watch it on Disney Plus.
Is it on Disney Plus?
I think so. Should be.
I'll check. But yeah, it's the fact that we had such an incompetent, poorly run offense last year, and not just the scheme. The scheme was bad, but the actual play calling within the scheme was bad. So I see a lot of people questioning, like, you know, why do Bears fans have such high hopes for the new offensive coordinator? And it's they're like, he's a first-time play caller. I get it, but we had a terrible play caller in the past, like a terrible one with a bad system. And you know, it can't be worse. It just can't be. Like, the system itself, we know the system that's being brought in. We know it works. And it's worked for multiple teams. And so even if there's growing pains with the actual sequence of play calling, is you feel like the system itself is going to create potential to score points and move the chains. And, you know, you had Matt Nagy, who was so goddamn stubborn that there was just things he wouldn't do. Like, you had to bully him into running the ball. He was like, in the red zone, we're going with Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham in the red zone. And you're like, why? Why not Cole Kmet? Like, it just didn't make any sense. So, you know, you take away that stubbornness and you add a better system. Even if they're equally bad play callers, you've got two things going for you.
That's a good way to look at it. That is optimism 101 from Sean Hotman on the 2022 Bears. That's what optimism for 2022 is going to look like. That it can't be worse than last year. That's basically where we're at.
Oh my God.
But we say that, can it be worse than Matt Nagy?
No, it can't. Yeah, it could, but we've already experienced that. Like, literally, we have had the worst offensive coordinators in the history of offensive coordinators in our lifetime, or my lifetime of the Bears. So throw your worst at me, universe.
Boy, that pause was not very reassuring.
Like, I've lived through some terrible Bears offensive coordinators.
Who would you say was the worst in your lifetime?
John Shoup.
Okay. I could think, I'm sure there was a very popular nickname for him.
I mean, Terry Shea. I don't know. They were back to back. Probably Terry Shea. Terry Shea, probably. That just whole period was just bad offenses. Terry Shea probably was the worst. They brought back Ron Turner after that. So, like, the history of Bears offensive coordinators in my lifetime. Let's see. Sid Gilman. He was no good. Ken Meyer. He wasn't good. Ted Marchabrota, Ed Hughes was probably one of the most successful. Greg Landry,
Matt. Is he related to Tom Landry?
I don't know. Matt Kavanaugh, was terrible. Gary Croton was not good. John Shoup, not good. Terry Shea was probably the lowest of the low. Ron Turner was just Ron Turner. Then they brought in Mike Martz, which was a train wreck. Then they brought in Mike Tice, who was not very good. Then Aaron Cromer, who we've heard the stories of Olin Krutz giving him the old CHGO treatment.
Oof.
We had Adam Gase, who was okay, but we only had him for like one season.
And I thought Adam Gase did a pretty good job with what he had. That was 2015.
Yeah.
That roster, that was arguably Jay Cutler's best year as a Bear.
Then we had Dow Loggins, who was hired because Jay Cutler didn't hate him. He was not good.
Then to be fair, though, he had very little to work with.
That's true. But then we went to Mark Helfrich, who was not good, and they fired him. And it wasn't even his fault. He didn't call plays. He was just like, he was the scapegoat for Matt Nagy being terrible. Mm-hmm. So essentially, you had Mark Helfrich and Bill Lazor, who were just surrogates for Matt Nagy. So it went Dow Loggins to Matt Nagy. So it's just, there's been some really bad offensive coordinators in this time.
Mike Martz, that name just angers me. I mean, he was good at his job in his prime, but it was bad with the Bears, and it just sounded like he was a real a-hole.
Yeah. I mean, because of him, we traded one of the best tight ends we've seen in a long time.
And that was unforgivable. That was absolutely unforgivable.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back to Terry Shea. It was so bad. Like, when he got fired, Lovie Smith went, "He's a good man." But I felt like this was the direction we had to go. It was just saying, like, that guy stunk. But he's a nice guy. He just stunk.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks.
During his tenure, the Bears lost more fumbles than they had offensive touchdowns.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow, you got to be really bad to do that.
Yeah. Terry Shea was terrible. And he had these like same plays that was like he pulled Matt Nagy where he had like these like trick plays, but he would run them so regularly that because they were like the only things that reasonably worked. And
so he's a guy who thought he was good at Madden.
Yes. Terry Shea was just so bad. Like I sort of want to go back and watch all of those games again, just to document the historic badness of the Terry Shea offense. And to be fair, like he had a shit team to work with.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
You know, so you look at him and I'm looking at the roster that year. Your quarterbacks were Jeff George, Chad Hutchinson, and Jonathan Quinn.
Chad Hutchinson.
Yeah, Anthony Thomas and Thomas Jones as your running backs.
Love Thomas Jones.
But you know, you were just a bad team. God. The offensive line, Kasim Mitchell, Terrence Metcalf, the corpse of Olin Krutz, Mike Gandy, always injured Mark Colombo. Reuben Brown was on IR. Mike Brown was on IR. Rex Grossman was IR. Craig Krenzel was on IR. Brian Urlacher, Adewale Ogunleye were hurt. That was just a bad, bad team. The Bears started four quarterbacks that year: Chad Hutchinson, Craig Krenzel, Jonathan Quinn, and Rex Grossman.
Oof. Was that 04?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was Lovey's first year.
That was such a bad season.
Well, the next two were pretty good.
Jeez. I'm just looking here. Your passing yards by game. I'm going to read you the offensive passing yards. This is the regular season, not preseason. 214, 125, 239, 192, bye week, 34, 91, 134, 109, 75, 145, 91, 174, 179, 149, 105, 136.
Yikes.
Your total yards in a game: 342, 307, 385, 224 bye week, 160, 167, 254, 231, 176, 224, 140, 318, 210, 203, 229, 246.
That's remarkably terrible.
That is absolutely terrible. And it's tough to even put into words how bad that was. Let's see. Chad Hutchinson threw for, I think he was your leading, was he your leading passer that year? Chad Hutchinson was your leading passer, and he threw for 900 yards, four touchdowns, three interceptions.
Wow.
And he had a 73 quarterback rating, and he was far and away your best quarterback rating, because Craig Krenzel had a 52 quarterback rating and Jonathan Quinn had a 53. Craig Krenzel had three touchdowns and six interceptions. Jonathan Quinn had one touchdown and three interceptions. Jonathan Quinn played in five games and had 400 yards passing in five games.
Yeah, that's not good. That is, that's pretty awful.
Craig Krenzel played in six games and passed for 718 yards.
Oh. Of all the gross things we talked about on this podcast, I think number one has to be the 2004 Bears.
Like, it was terrible. You only had one receiver go over 500 yards. You only had three that went over 300 yards. It was such a brutal year. Like, if you're ever just like home, like sick, and you're just like, you know what, I just need something to do, just watch those games. Just watch a few series of those games.
You're going to advise sick people to watch that?
Yes. It'll make you feel better about your illness, because you're like, oh, you know what? This bird flu I have isn't so bad compared to this Bears offense. Like, it's just watch a few series and you will see the worst offense that's ever been assembled.
Well, you know what? I'm going to gladly pass on that, but thank you for that suggestion.
Telling you, one day you're going to be like, you know what? I'm feeling like I want to inflict self-punishment. I'm going to watch it.
Dr. Hotman's prescription.
My prescription.
The 2004 Bears.
It was so bad.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I've said my piece and I'm going to go to bed with nightmares of the 2004 Bears. So thanks a lot.
Craig Krenzel's coming to get me.
Don't worry. Just go about 20 yards. He won't get
it's like, have you ever seen the Freddy Krueger movies? It's like 1-2, Craig Krenzel's going to throw an interception for you.
Oh man.
I just turned it ball over again to the Packers.
No.
Alex wakes up in the middle of the night with cold sweats. Just like, oh my God. Oh, thank God Justin Fields is our quarterback.
Honey, it's okay. Craig Krenzel can't get you. He's long retired. It's okay.
You look at your closet and suddenly your Justin Fields jersey, it turns around and it says Krenzel on the back.
And there's a outside.
They were both Ohio State quarterbacks.
You motherfucker. You son. Oh.
Craig Krenzel. I'm pretty sure he went to Ohio State. Craig Krenzel. He went to Ohio State. He led the 2002 Buckeyes to the national championship.
Hey, hell of a college career. Like a lot of Bears quarterbacks. Good college career. NFL, not so much.
Yeah. But that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so
Craig
much.
Craig Krenzel's got me!
Craig Krenzel.
This needs to be a regular bit. Like, the Craig Krenzel monster is going to get you.
You should ask yourself, was it Terry Shea that made Craig Krenzel bad, or did Craig Krenzel make Terry Shea bad? And then you have that little girl from the meme. Why not both?
You know what I see? I see Terry Shea being Dr. Frankenstein and then bringing up Craig Krenzel. It's alive!
Sort of. My interception machine is alive! But I want to thank everybody for listening. Please hit subscribe. However you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2. You can also follow Alex at AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win. What a lucky break. The good Lord wants the Cubs to win.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win.
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...